ran free in the fields of clover with the paints and the palominos laying in my fist a silver pin. I'm thrown again, I won't quit. There's always a sky hat that's blue. There's nothing I can put on blue.
Thank you. This is WKCR 89.9 FM New York, and I am sitting with the members of Frankenpine. Let's start simply. How did you guys meet? How did this band become what it is today? Just give us the rundown of the history of Frankenpine.
So Frankenpine basically started as a jam session between James, who plays mandolin and sings, and Kim, my wife, who plays guitar and sings, and myself, Matthew, I play banjo. And the three of us got together. Basically, I had just started playing banjo, and Kim and James were singing and playing together in another band and coming over to work out songs. And so we started playing together and had a really great vibe and started playing together every Saturday. And then other members started to join. It became a jam session, and then it crystallized as a band at some point.
And how did the sound of Frankenpine sort of develop and come to be?
Well, initially, when it was just the three of us, we went through a stage where James was actually playing electric guitar because he was filling out, you know, the bass side of it and the fiddle part and all the parts. And so as a trio, it formed that way. And then
we would play live, and we couldn't get mixed because it would be a combination of electric and acoustic, and we got really fed up, so we decided to go all acoustic.
Yeah,
we were actually...
And now you're adding electric.
we were playing at Bluegrass Night at Parkside Lounge one time, and we had the James on electric guitar, and someone was very upset that there was electric in the mix, and someone actually yelled at us while we were on stage.
Yeah, someone yelled, "Play some bluegrass!"
Oh my gosh! So,
then we were lucky to actually. Liz had played with James for a while, just the two of them. So that made sense for her to join with us.
Liz is the fiddle player.
Yes, sorry.
And I was occasionally at the jam sessions when it started getting a little bigger.
And then Ned and David, the guitar and bass, came to jam sessions, and we said, "Hey, you want to be in the band?"
We said, "Yeah."
Great. That's Frankenpine.
And I would walk me through the process of writing a song. I mean, you keep talking about these jam sessions, but then how do you then go on to say, "All right, we're going to put this down on paper, and here we have a song." Like, how does that?
There are several songs that I had written ahead of time, and in one instance, actually, I had lyrics written. This was actually for Boatman, and music written, but I wasn't very happy with the music, and I said, "Hey, James, can you take this and give it a better sound with music?" So that was a really nice collaborative writing process where I already had the lyrics, and he kind of knew what I wanted to do, and he took the song and made it incredibly strong, so that was good. We do a lot of collaborative writing together and working out musical parts. And
Rivers and Tides started with like a chord progression that we jammed out regularly and then started adding the other parts to it. And so we had this basically a song, but we didn't have any words for it. It was just, a chord progression that, just keep appearing every jam session we had. And so one day we were putting the movie Rivers and Tides about Andrew Goldsworthy on our projector while we were playing along. And we're like, "Hey, we should write the song about this." And so we kind of brainstormed lyrics from images in the movie, and that's how that song got written.
Well, very cool. That was sort of leading up to my next question, which is sort of cliche, but what would you say are the major influences of this band and the music that comes from it?
I would say Gillian Welsh is a big influence. Others?
I think one thing that's kind of cool is in getting to know everybody. Everybody's been in different bands and different kinds of bands for years and years. And I was living in upstate New York in the Adirondacks and playing with kind of old-timey people. But then I also had this like hip-hop and rock improv band, and then this sort of honky-tonk band, and then David's gone through lots of periods of music that sound nothing like what we're doing now, but it all sort of blends together and informs what we're doing. So I think while we have sort of, you can hear all these kind of country-ish and bluegrass-ish and old-time-ish influences, they're in there, but then we've got our own perspectives, which are really pretty varied, and they come together and mix in a way that I think gives the band kind of a close to unique, if not unique, sound.
Yeah, I think something we're really interested in is having, you know, playing these traditional instruments and traditional arrangements, but making really contemporary songs, you know, songs that aren't just restricted to a country sound or, you know, three chords or something like that, but writing songs that are influenced by rock or, you know, any genres and, you know, whatever sounds we're interested in, but then translating it to acoustic instruments.
I'm fairly recent to the band, and I've been sort of just struggling to acquaint myself with bluegrass and all these genres, which I wasn't really acquainted with before. But I actually kind of take a lot from soul. Like, I'm used to playing soul music and R&B music. So I don't know exactly how it's translating, but they seem to like it. So.
David almost quit the band one night when I made an Elton John joke.
I'm an Elton John fan.
That's actually kind of the idea of Frankenpine. It's there's a lot of pine names in bluegrass bands, and Franken is kind of Frankenstein. So Frankenpine, because it's kind of a mixture of all different types of sounds with a bluegrass influence. But also a good friend of ours, he did a series of Frankenpine paintings, and Frankenpines are actually those huge pine trees along the highway that actually aren't pine trees. They're cell phone towers disguised as pine trees. And they call them Frankenpines. And there's actually one on the Merritt Parkway, kind of as you're entering into Connecticut.
Interesting.
Yeah, we like that image of, like, the modern trying to be with nature and disguising itself as a tree. And, you know, as being like a, you know, playing bluegrass music in a city seems kind of appropriate, like a metal tree.
Well, that's another thing that I wanted to sort of get at, is that there seems to be this bluegrass scene that is becoming very well established in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, bluegrass is definitely a music that is, it's an American root music, you know, it's associated with the South.
Farms.
And the rural South, exactly. But here, somehow it's been transported to, you know, the most populous city in the United States and one of the biggest cities in the world. And I was wondering if you guys had any speculation on how, like, I guess the landscape changes music and how it would sort of, being in a city changes bluegrass. And
I think bluegrass has kind of always been about that, because it came out of people that were moving from the farms to the mines. And so they were longing for the farm, and that's why there's so many songs about the old home place and songs that are, you know, nostalgic for living on the farm. So I think here we are in the city also kind of longing for living out in the country a little bit. And so I think this music kind of feeds that longing a little bit. Or, yeah. And I think that's what it's always been about. That's why people gathered around the radio and listened to the Grand Ole Opry, was because they were thinking about, you know, their grandparents who'd lived on the farm and they were now working in mines or in industry.
I think, too, that the bluegrass tradition is kind of more more specifically preserved or intentionally preserved here in the city, whereas when I was living upstate in the country, like, playing with people, it was much more informal. There was sort of anything would go, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think the music was a bit looser because everybody was... they were in the country, you know, there wasn't that longing part to it, you know, and then here, it's like, okay, none of us is in our bluegrass scene, so we have to make it and sort of solidify it.
Right.
So it seems slightly more rigid here, I think.
And
not bad rigid, just...
Yeah. Would you say that is part of the reason why you would choose to pick up an instrument like the mandolin or like the banjo to produce this sort of longing for the country sound? I mean, why bluegrass instruments?
Well, you know, a bunch of us, a common thread a lot of us all have is that we go to the Gray Fox Bluegrass Festival, or have gone to it, what used to be the Winter Hawk Bluegrass Festival. And I think for me, when I first went to that was just a revelation, just being able to walk up to a group of 20 musicians with an instrument and you can all join in and play. Whereas you can't really do that with other genres of music or something. And the more we would do it, I'd keep going back each year. And I would see other people playing other instruments, and I'd be like, well, I'd like to try to learn that. Because it sounds, you know, if you have six people playing the guitar, it's nice to have someone doing something else.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, it was at Gray Fox that I said one day, I want to learn the banjo. Same thing. I realized that the people that were jamming were having a lot more fun than the people that weren't jamming.
And also, it's just been really nice. I played a lot more electric guitar than I do acoustic guitar. Now I'm doing more acoustic guitar playing and playing in a band where everybody's playing an acoustic instrument. Sorry, David, but you're close, you know.
You do very well imitating.
It's really nice. The sounds all are very they're very organic. They're very they're kind of pure and not a dippy wholesome way, but in a kind of almost sacred way, you know. Mm-hmm. And so you can hear how people's instruments sound different on different days, you know, because the weather's different, you know, and that's been really fun to make music that way with everybody.
And the fiddle?
Well, my background is in classical. I've trained for 10 or 12 years and dropped out of it because it was so rigid and so competitive, and it actually took me several years and a lot of poking from James to get me to start playing in front of people. But it's been so rewarding. And, you know, letting go of that need to meet some expectation that, not even knowing what the expectation is, but knowing that it has to be perfect, you know. It's hard to get over, but it's a great experience.
We all just say, that sounded so good.
And that play louder.
Yeah, and louder.
Closer to the mic.
Yeah. Exactly. And to go back to sort of this Brooklyn bluegrass scene, like what's it like to be part of that scene where, you know, all these venues are really welcoming these, you know, young bluegrass artists?
I think it gives us a lot of opportunities to play in different venues because it is, I mean, we have found a niche, so and there's certain venues that cater towards that type of music, so it's very easy to kind of market ourselves towards those venues and have those venues be really accepting of us because there is that whole genre that exists in Brooklyn. And and beyond, too. I mean, actually, we played quite a bit in the Lower East Side as well.
And it's very welcoming, I've noticed. I mean, I'm fairly new to it. I moved down here in December, and still you go to a place like Jalopy, you know, in Red Hook, and you're immediately sort of embraced by all the musicians, which is really cool.
Yeah, and the bands, too. Everyone helps each other out, and, you know, there are slots where someone's putting together a country evening, and, you know, bands will call each other and say, oh, I know another good band for this night. And so that's really nice, too. It's not a competitive thing at all.
Yeah, that's what happened to us, how we got our gig at Spike Hill, yeah. Where we have another one coming up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, August 2nd, we'll be at Spike Hill. And
in Williamsburg.
In Williamsburg, on Bedford Ave.
All right, very nice.
There's a little plug.
That's totally fine. But how do you think it became... Like, why are these venues welcoming bluegrass music? I mean, I don't think that in most cities you find this, like, really strength in numbers that this bluegrass scene in Brooklyn has, I don't know, started to have in terms of venues and bands that are willing to play. Like, any ideas? This is just...
I don't know. The 60s, there was the folk movement here. Maybe the city has a longing for this kind of music, and kind of keeps coming back.
And actually, I think Bela Fleck is from New York City.
Yeah.
And John Hartford was hanging out, right, in New
he's
York?
He's from St. Louis.
Yeah, but he was hanging out in New York, I mm-hmm. think. Yeah. So maybe it was those influences.
Maybe just, like, this whole city sort of knew that it needed it.
That's right.
We're missing something. Yeah. What is it? And then everybody showed up with banjos. Oh. Yeah. And all the banjos were so happy because nobody ever, you know, usually banjos are kicked, you know, pushed away. And I'm like, oh, we found our home. People want us.
Yeah,
here.
And that's actually, it could be a need for community as well because we're kind of partitioned in these little cubby holes in the city. And bluegrass is very inclusive.
You usually play in a circle. Yeah.
You play in a circle. There's jams. People give each other breaks. People take turns calling out songs. So it's very about community.
Yeah, I think if New York it doesn't get any more urban and big city than New York.
Exactly.
And because of that, I mean, I know I've found it's been a kind of oasis to come to jam with these guys. It's kind of, you know, I don't really get any nature or outdoorsiness on a day-to-day basis, but it gives me some of that, I don't know, that kind of campfire atmosphere and that sort of returning to nature feel, mm-hmm. So it may be popular for that reason.
I think it's an antidote to the digital age, too, playing acoustic instruments. Like, you know, we're at a point where with your own laptop you can make almost any sound, and so it's something very different to be, like, making something that isn't plugged in, that's acoustic and just filling a room.
Kind of like how people are going back to records. We just recently got a record player. We got a huge collection of records. So,
yeah, it is very quite interesting. Again, we are talking with the members of Frankenpine. I was wondering if maybe we could just go around the room and each of you all say your name and the instrument that you play.
I'm James. I play the mandolin and I sing harmony.
And I'm Ned and I play the guitar.
I'm David. I play the electric bass.
I'm Liz and I play the fiddle.
I'm Kim and I play acoustic guitar and sing.
I'm Matthew and I play the banjo.
Well, thank you guys so much. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure for us too.